And welcome to this special episode of Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg and Emilio Dinello. This episode centers around former Chief Football Officer Mike Rigg in regards to the team he built last season. We have a huge amount to cover, but before we do anything, I have to bring on both of my co-hosts. So it looks like they're both with me. First, Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Doing well. Looking forward to the show and chatting with Emilio about Mike Rigg and the players who came in and left as well, and see if we can see what he's provided to the team and the club since he joined us.
Yes, listen, there are many, many names and many, many transactions that happened over the course of the season, and we're not going to be able to really go in depth about all of them, but there are so many of them. We're going to try to touch on as much of it as we can, because we want to try to build the picture, Mike, and that's what we're doing in the show, to look at why we ended up where we were and what was part of the cause of it, and part of the causes has to be the actual team that he built. But we have to look at that, and that's what we're going to do in this next 60 to 70 minutes. But before we do anything, I have to welcome Emilio back to the show. Emilio, how you doing?
Hi there, Russ. Hi there, Mike. Nice to be back on the show. It's been a while. It's been a few weeks. But, I'm looking forward to doing the show this evening. It's a good opportunity to reflect on the last, 12, 15 months, since Rigg's been officially there in his position as Chief Football Officer. So, again, it's an opportunity to reflect on what he's done well, not so well, and we've got an opportunity to air our thoughts and how hopefully what we can do to improve the position in the next 12 to 18 months, because obviously we can't get any worse than what we did last year. The positions on the performances on the pitch were diabolical for most of the season, but let's look upwards and hopefully Mike Rigg, if he's going to play a part in the season, something needs to change in the next 3 months.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, guys, before we really get going, I just want to mention this because this was brought to me by a Fulham supporter who wanted to bring this to my attention. Fulham's match day program was named runner-up in the Sky Bet Championship program of the season awards voted by the other media teams in the championship. Burnley came in first, Fulham obviously came in second, Hull City came in third. I want to congratulate program editor Tom Harvey, designer Paul West, and all the people involved with the program. It really is a wonderful program. It's a first-rate product, and they deserve serious credit. And before we talk about Mike Rigg, I want to get your thoughts about the program because I have so many of them at my house. You want to win, but runner-up isn't bad either, Mike.
No, and I think they won an award during one of the months of the season for the best program in the championship. So, there's some good stuff still going on at Fulham. The program, local stuff they do with the kids, and there's a lot of hard work that goes on, certainly by Fulham Foundation as well, with the coaching schools for the youngsters. So it's not all doom and gloom at the club. We can criticise it a lot, but there's still some good work going on, within the sort of Fulham family, if you like.
Right, definitely. And listen, I can really be a good judge about programs, even here, and programs that I've experienced over the years in different sports. And I'm here to tell you that the Fulham program is definitely one of the best I've ever seen. So congratulations to them. Emilio, your thoughts on the program before we move on?
No, again, I think it was this time last year. I think we actually won the championship program of the year. So to come second, it's still, still a good, good achievement. I think to Mike's point, there's a lot of good information in that program. I must have built up nearly 600 in one of my spare rooms here in the house. There's things I've just, I tend to collect programs over the years. Unfortunately, the last couple of seasons, I've been a little bit more reluctant to purchase week in, week out. But there's nearly 600 there in the collection. Very informative. Good information about the academy, the results, the tables. When my father passed away this year, they put a nice obituary in there for my father. So, again, they're very receptive to the community. So if you want to put an article in there, the publications team are very, very supportive. So, it's very informative to Mike's point. That there's a lot of coverage there from academy, first team squad, to backroom staff, to all the different departments. And, again, there is a lot going on behind Fulham Football Club other than just negative performances on the pitch. So, well-deserved. It's a shame we couldn't win this time around. But again, we seem to always be in the top two year in, year out when it comes to programs. So, yeah, well done, Fulham Football Club.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I want to mention that the club put in a little note about my father passing away in the Bolton program. So thank you to them as well. And listen, they do a first-rate product. And when this was given to my attention, I definitely wanted to start the show talking about that because there are some really great people who work for the club and that are really doing a nice job. I believe Jeff Pruce is also involved with the program, so I know Jeff, so congratulations to him as well. And looking forward to the program for next season. All right, guys, it's time to get in the show. And to start it, and Mike, I'm going to start with you, I'm just going to go through the names of the players that went out on June 12th. This is the beginning of the building process for the new season because the players that left. So let's talk about the players that left, Mike, and I want to get your thoughts on them as a unit. Was there anyone that you wish could have stayed? Here is the list of players that left June 12th of last year. Hugo Rodriguez, Tim Hoogland, Gabor Kiriwai, Chris David, Adil Chihi, Josh Pasley, Solomon Sambu, Jonathan Boateau, and Noah Baba. Is there anyone there that you wished stayed at Fulham?
I would like Chris David to stay, and I was always a fan of Rodallega, but you know, you have to look at the finances and for Rodallega and his wages, and I think it was time he moved on. But really, looking at that list, yeah, the only one I would have kept is Chris David. So if we're talking about Mike Wigg being involved in releasing some of these, I don't know how involved he was there, to be honest. I mean, he was only working at the club for a couple of months, really. And a lot of those youngsters would have been released in conjunction with speaking to, you know, Hugh Jennings and, you know, the under-21 people. So for me, Chris David, I would like to have kept, but everyone else, Hoogland, for me, wasn't good enough. So, he's the only one I would have kept.
Okay, very good. And over to you, Emilio. Out of that list, you know, again, Mike brought up a good point that at this point, Mike Rigg was in the job for only a short period of time, and Hugh Jennings would have been involved with some of the younger players. But I was more curious in this part, was there anyone that you wished would have stayed at the club for last season? And Mike mentioned Chris David. Actually, I was thinking of Chris David as well. Is there anyone that stood out to you in that list?
Predictably, it is Chris David as well. But this guy had a lot of talent. I think we didn't use him enough in the preceding couple seasons. You know, I remember he scored that excellent goal, I think it was against Crystal Palace in the last game of the Premier League season a couple of years ago. And we thought, wow, this is a play for the following season, first year in the Championship. But just whether there are some attitude issues or whether it's just confrontational and, you know, conflictual issues with his managers and his rest of the team. I don't know what went on there, but there's obviously some other things did go on behind the scenes which resulted in him leaving the club. But you know, those other players, Hugo Rodriguez, I didn't actually think he was good enough for being in the Premier League. He just didn't score enough goals, really. And that was one of the reasons why we went down. Yes, we conceded a lot of goals, but his goal ratios was very, very poor. You know, even at Wigan, he scored the odd goal here and there. He scored in fits and bursts. He scores two or three consecutive games, then he won't score another goal in 12 games. And just wasn't good enough for the Premier League. So I think one of Mike Rigg's objectives was to cut the wage bill, and that was a natural, you know, obvious candidate to release last year. And Tim Hoogland, you know, can play in multiple positions, various positions, to be very, very poor. So he did offer some goals in the under McGath early on that season, but didn't really offer much else. And Pyjamas leaving, well, that was, you know, no surprise there. So the rest are all like fringe players, under 20, you know, under 21 players, never really hit the first team. So, you know, no surprises there, to be honest. It was a bit of a mini clear up, but, you know, it was more beyond that. Who are we going to bring in to strengthen that squad? We can touch on that point in a moment.
Okay, very good. And I just noticed, and I'm sorry, you had sent me a message. Was there a quote that you wanted to read, Emilio? Is it too late to read the quote?
No, not at all. I think I've done a bit of research. I've just done a bit of analysis around when Khan appointed Rigg back in December 2014. And just maybe this sets the scene in terms of what role Khan brought Rigg in to do. And if I just sort of read a quote from Khan back in 2014, it will help set the scene for all of us on the call tonight and our listeners. So Khan stated that the focus was on the short, mid, and long-term product on the pitch. In my mind, that called for a head of all football activities that will report directly to me, but work collaboratively with Kit, obviously Kit Simons at the time, our scouting group, the academy, sports performance medical team, and our analytics team. So again, it just sets the scene in terms of what the role that Rig was asked to come in to do, the coverage, and then maybe that we should use that to sort of set the scene in terms of, you know, what did Rig do well, not so well, and his overall coverage, not necessarily actually the players on the pitch, but he's obviously working with the academy, the medical team, analytics. So again, it's quite a far-reaching remit here. So I think that's something we should all bear in mind when we sort of discuss whether he succeeded or failed over the last 12, 15 months.
No, that's very interesting because his job description is a little bit more wide-ranging than many think, and I'm glad that you read that because that's something that we should really keep in mind as we go through this show. All right, guys, let's now move on to the team building, bringing in the players, and I'm going to give you several players that came to Fulham from June 19th to July 7th. They're a decent amount. We're talking about five players, so I'm going to give them to you and just share your comments on these group of players and on the face of it, what was going through your mind when Fulham brought these players in. Let's start with June 19th. We got Andrew Lonergan on a free from Bolton. On the same day, we got Ben Pringle on a free from Rotherham. And at that time, I remember he was deciding with a few different teams. At that point, I thought it was a very good thing because I really wanted Ben Pringle. So I'm being honest when I tell you I was in favor of Ben Pringle. The big move for me was June 26th when they brought in Tom Kearney from Blackburn for an undisclosed amount. Then you had July 2nd, guys. Jazz Richards comes to the club undisclosed from Swansea City. I'm talking about the amount. Then you have Jamie O'Hara on July 7th on a free from Blackpool. So you have five players that played different roles on the club for the, at this point, this is more the team building. But, Mike, I want to go to you because, I gave you players here that all had a role in some fashion with the club. What are your thoughts about the group of these players that came in at the time and how it all turned out for them?
Okay, well, I think partly you have to go back a bit as well. You know, I mean, okay. Emilio just went through his sort of job description that Khan gave him. And, you know, to all intents and purposes, it's a director of football / chief football officer, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But I think when you look at what Mike Rigg has done since he's come in, and I'll say first, I've met him a number of times at meetings at the ground and on away games as well, pre-season and during the season. Always found him very amenable, easy to talk to, and certainly has the club at heart and what he's trying to do. But I think if you go back to the season before and the loan signings that he brought in towards the end of the season, because he was officially sort of working for his sort of
right
in between gardening leave and bits and pieces. But all British players who came in, so they had Michael Turner, James Husband, Danny Guthrie, and Richard Lee, which was a bit of an odd one. But, and his job at the FA was, was identification of talent, especially within, England and Wales. And so it's noticeable that the group of loanees, all British, and then that first month or two, the players who were coming in, again, all British. And what had the fans been asking for throughout last season? Or, first season in the Championship. We need Championship players. We don't need these foreigners who are coming in and having trouble adapting or, and the Premier League players are finding it hard. So that's what he went out and did, with Ben Pringle, I saw him twice for Rotherham, a couple of times on TV, I was quite very pleased with him being signed. Lonergan, most fans or most people who follow football or the Championship, if you like, know he was solid goalkeeper. Kearney, good performer. One we spent with Jazz Richards, we'd already seen. A lot of us had made our mind up very early on, but, Kit being manager, the Welsh stink, that was a pretty obvious one that was going to happen.
Right.
I'm sure Riggs, signed it off, and that would have been in, conjunction with Kit. And Jamie O'Hara, if you follow his story, is that he contacted the club,
right,
and Kit in particular. So, initially, and I, I saw your poll, which you will talk about later, I'm sure, or if you want to mention it now. But a lot of what we're talking about, we know the end result, so it's all in hindsight. But at the time, the vast majority of people were happy, certainly with Pringle and Kearney joining, Lonergan being solid, Richards 50-50. O'Hara was, he's experienced, but he's had his problems. But what's the harm? He's a free transfer. He probably won't play much. So all in all, I thought that was a good solid five to come in that in the early part of the summer.
Right, and that's why I wanted to approach this twofold. Like I said, I wanted to look at what were we thinking at the time when these players came in, and we're going to go through because we're also going to be talking about players going out, and then we can reflect on the end result. But I think it's, to be fair, we have to look at it twofold, like I said. And you've already talked about that. These five players, and I'm glad that you mentioned the lone players prior because there is a trend there. British players, all these British players came in early on into the club. All right, Amelia, what do you make of this group of five players? And also Mike's bringing up this bringing in British players early on because it definitely was they definitely did to bring in British players, but also to bring in championship players.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point that Mike made, and I think the key thing is we were all crying out for these experienced championship players who know how to fight, how to battle, both at the top end of the division, also at the lower end of the division, and these are players who performed particularly well in their previous clubs. Some of these were players of the season, if I recall. I think Tom Kearney, Pringle, O'Hara were players of the year for their previous clubs. So
they were.
There's a common theme here. So you're starting to see, I think we've had this discussion before 12 months ago, where the players that we were targeting are players who have been successful at this level with their previous clubs, performed, week in, week out, got the experience, were British. And this was very encouraging because ultimately, end of June, early, the fixtures already been released by the time these players were signed. Maybe there's a little bit of a concern on my part that maybe we didn't do enough transfer signings before pre-season. The pre-season probably started around the 7th, 10th of July. So maybe there was an opportunity to bring in more players and obviously to gel them in ready for pre-season. But in the back of my mind, I thought that Ben Pringle, I was very encouraged because he had two very good games against us for Rotherham. Tom Kearney, was the player I was most looking forward to when he joined. Jazz Richards, we knew what he was made of, nothing spectacular the previous season, but, wouldn't do much right, wouldn't necessarily do much wrong. And Jamie O'Hara has still had a lot more to prove at this level. So I was encouraged, but in the back of my mind, maybe there was a bit of a hope that some of our other players we wouldn't sell, like Pat Roberts. In the back of my mind, maybe there was still an opportunity we'd retain him. There's all the speculation, 10, 12 months ago, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe we haven't gone for the top-of-the-range signings here. We've gone for cheap, free transfers, experienced players, got some bargains in the process, but could we still retain some of my higher crop of players like the Pat Roberts? Even Brian Ruiz. Maybe there's something in my mind saying, could we still keep Brian Ruiz? Maybe I was being a little bit hopeful, but just seemed a little bit tentative. And again, maybe what we didn't know then was maybe some of the financial fair play pressures that maybe the club were potentially under. So I know we may cover this later in the show, but now we can, in hindsight, we can discuss that point. But at the time, it was a little bit tentative, a little bit quiet, not extravagant, but maybe there was more underlying factors behind the scenes that restricted us from going for those high-profile big signings. So, it's again, what was Riggs' role? What's he there to do? He's trying to identify talent, like Mike said earlier, but also keep the wage bill low, transfer signings low, and looking at those five players he signed, we didn't spend very much, let's be very frank.
No, very, very interesting there, Emil. And I'm glad that you brought up financial fair play because we are definitely going to be talking about that during this show because I think it's a factor in everything that went in here, especially when we go further on into the team building. I think financial fair play was I think they're very cognizant of that throughout the whole team building process. And Mike, I'm going to go to you because Emilio already talked about two players we're just about to talk to because we're talking about the players coming in, but we did lose some players. Some significant players. So the players going out from July 7th to July 26th included, I will give the two names that aren't that big of names, were later on in the process. Lyle Delaverde left on July 22nd. Ryan Williams left on July 26th. the big names is Brian Ruiz left on July 7th for an undisclosed amount to Sporting Lisbon. Then you had the deal of Pat Roberts on July 22nd going to Manchester City. All right, Mike, what are your thoughts about those four players leaving? I think you can really hone in on more on Ruiz and Roberts and what that meant. And do you think possibly, I'm glad that Emilio mentions that financial fair play could have also been a part of this.
Well, yeah, I'll ignore the other two lads. They were fringe players and, you know,
right,
been on loan elsewhere. So let's take Brian Ruiz first. And I don't think, you know, I don't know if it was Mike Rigg or whether it was Alistair McIntosh, but let's remember at the end of last season, his contract was up. And I, for one, just wanted rid, you know, just let him go. It hasn't worked out. Just go on a free. And I remember we gave him a contract. You know, we got him to sign a contract. And it was like,
right,
what are we doing? You know, we're not going to use him. And we've had trouble trying to sell him anyway. But to be fair to the club, you know, very early on in July, they were able to pick up whatever it was, 1 or 2 million. So if that's a rig persuasion of him to get him to sign a contract, and then we've sold him almost straight away and made some money, that's a bonus, you know, because he wasn't going to play for us again, you know, during the season. And I always expect for a club like ours, you know, to sell one main youngster or one young player a year for a decent amount of money. That's that, you know, if you're looking at the club and financially how it can run and be self-sufficient, that's just the way you have to work as a club.
Business.
So with Roberts only having a year left, I fully expected Pat Roberts to leave. He wanted to go, and you know, he wasn't going to sign an extension. So we sold him, and in fact, those two players bring the money and paid for our transfers. And when you know, our transfers last summer, and when you consider financial fair play and the fact that we did fail it in season 14 to 15, and you can look at it, we only failed it by a million, maybe a million and a half, and that was the failure to sell Ruiz in January 2015. So if we'd sold him in January 2015 for that kind of money, we may well have balanced the books.
Huh.
But so to balance the transfers of last season with the sale of two players and bringing in whatever it ends up being when we go through this list, maybe a dozen players, then, you know, you've got to say that's good business for a club which is trying to play within the rules of financial fair play. So, yes, disappointing. I wasn't overly disappointed Ruiz left because I never expected to see him play anymore. Roberts, I was disappointed with, but I completely understood the transfer. And, so, you know, that's the way I see those two ones. And in the end, I thought it sounds as if we've got a decent deal for Roberts going forward, you know, with appearance money and you know, installments for how well he does.
Okay, very good there, Mike. And listen, I'm glad that you factored in all the business ends that go along with Pat Roberts and Brian Ruiz, because financial fair play is obviously something that the club last season was very aware of, and I think that also factored in. I'm glad that you talked about selling one young player a season is part of business. It's part of something that can help the larger scale of Fulham Football Club, you know, and Pat Roberts was a player that wanted to leave, and they probably made out on that. All right, Emil, what are your thoughts about what Mike just said, about specifically about Brian Ruiz and Pat Roberts in regards to the business end of potentially selling these players?
Yeah, I think it was inevitable that they both were going to leave. And, you know, Brian Ruiz, in his defence, you know, in the season before last, you know, he still battled, he still tried to fight hard, he scored a crucial goal against Reading in injury time, if I recall. You know, he played his part, but like Mike said, you know, it just didn't work out, which is a shame because, you know, in a funny way, I've actually missed his skill, trickery, his capability on the pitch in the last 12 months. We just haven't had somebody of that quality, albeit he didn't actually deliver it week in, week out for Fulham. So it was no surprise he was going to leave. And the Pat Roberts, I think there was always speculation, will he stay, won't he stay? And let's be honest, there's still speculation at the time whether Kit was going to stay or not. You know, look on the forums. On college tour, we were talking this time last year about, well, is Kit the right man? Do we still think he's going to stay? you know, are we going to sell Pat Roberts maybe to provide investment for some other big, more of a championship type of player? So there was still a lot of uncertainty back in July last year. So preseason had started. We'd had a few free transfers, maybe Tom Kenny on a slightly higher undisclosed amount, but it was fairly low key, you know, and fans were expecting big names to come in. And, you know, we go through the month of July, 3 weeks into pre-season, a couple of weeks away from the start of the new season, and we've let two of our big names go. But where's evidence of all these, you know, potential new signings coming in, big names, etc.? So, you know, we were all hanging in there waiting. Fulham would leave all their transfer activity usually to the last week of August anyway, but it's, you know, there's still all this uncertainty around whether Kit was going to go or not. You know, are we going to get the big signings? Are we going to be really targeting top six and, you know, pushing for promotion? There's all this uncertainty and speculation that we would or wouldn't. And, you know, it was not the most exciting of, you know, July last year. We were just hanging in there, hoping that we'd get, you know, a stronger type of player. But we let two good players go, and it all went a little bit quiet from a players coming in perspective. And, you know, I understand, I agree with Mike. You know, it was good financial business to get Pat Roberts going. You know, I'm glad to see him start to do quite well at Celtic. He's still a young lad, and, you know, I wish him all the best. But it was just disappointing. There was still something inside me saying, if we were to release Kit, would we be tempted to keep the likes of Pat Roberts in there? Now, maybe that was something lingering in the back of my mind, but that wasn't forthcoming. He left on the 22nd of July, and we had to start building a new squad of players, you know, with the absence of two of our bigger names. So, yeah, but it was just a little bit quiet in July. And I started to get a little bit worried because I just didn't see any evidence of good players coming into the club.
Okay, very good there, Emilio. Mike, back to you. I actually just got a tweet, and the tweet also went to you as well from Simon Patey while we're doing the show. He tweeted to both of us, do the bonuses on Roberts cover the performance while he's out on loan at Celtic or only for games with Man City?
Well, it depends on what's... somebody asked me question a couple of weeks ago. I was at a contract sort of discussion a few months ago, and with these kind of things, it's based on depends on the actual individual contract, so none of us are going to know that, but primarily it's first team appearances that they make, be it at the loaned at the club they've signed for or at another club as well. So
okay,
if he's making numbers of first team appearances, then that should count towards any kind of income, but it just down to the contract, which none of us know about.
Sure, but thank you very much for explaining that, Mike. All right, let's move on. Let's now look at just a couple of signings and loans from July 25th to August 20th. There were two. Three. I'm sorry about that. And Michael, I'll start with you. Let's start with Luke Garbutt, season-long loan from Everton on July 25th. Then we had Sakari Matilla coming August 4th from Alessand FK, and then on August 20th, Tim Ream came to Fulham, undisclosed from Bolton. And what's interesting about Tim Ream, and definitely want to get your thoughts on Tim Ream, because at the time, speculation was he was going to decide between Fulham and QPR. He ended up coming with us. So share me your thoughts about these three signings.
Okay, I think when we talk about Luke Garbutt, we have to mention James Husband, and
okay,
you know, he'd made such an impact
right
in
now.
he'd made such an impact in those five games he had for us at the end of the 14-15 season that, you know, throughout the summer we wanted him, the fans wanted him, and the club wanted him, to be fair. But you know, Borough would not budge. You know, they have a very good player there. They don't want to let him go. They don't want to sell him. Don't want to loan him out this early. You know, we're talking about July time. And so I actually met Mike Riggott in a friendly for the under-21s the day before we signed Garbutt, and he was leaving. He said, I'm going up north to sort of transfer out, and lo and behold, next day Garbutt had signed for us. So and again, you know, a young promising player who's played under-21, and yeah, there were a few mixed views on him. But, you know, he's come from a Premier League side, left back, which is what we needed. Disappointment he's not Husband, but, you know, for me, yeah, it's an okay signing. Matilla, no one knew anything about him, and I think that's people from his own country didn't know anything about him. And you know, he came in, you know, looking back, he's played a few games, he's looked okay at times, but in the end, he's not quite good enough. And if you believe everything, he's very much a stats related signing. And then Tim Ream, well, we all went to you, Russ. You know, is he any good?
Yep.
He's played for the US men's team. Where does he play? Centre back, left back? He's been Bolton, knows Championship. So again, you know, a centre back which we needed and somebody who can play on the left side. So again, a solid performer, we were hoping. You know, that is. So I go back to Emilio's point he made, and he made it quite well. We're all a bit a little underwhelmed in July and into August. There was the speculation, which I know we were going to talk about, Lewis Dunk and a couple of other players. But the transfers were taking time. You know, we're into the season, you know, which kicked off in the first week in August. And there we are getting Ream on the 20th of August. And, you know, you just wish some of these signings were a bit earlier. And, you know, and with Luke, he got himself injured as well pre-season. So, yeah, disappointing early start to the season in August. But, you know, Garbutt and Ream looked like decent signings, to be honest.
Yeah, they did, Mike. But here was my concern, because I actually was really trying to do some research on Tim Ream, and I had watched Tim Ream play for the U.S. men's national team at left back. But I was hoping he was coming as a center back. And as we found out with Tim Ream, you know, we still don't know what his best position is, because he can play both, but what is his best position? And my concern was that because I kept hearing all of this talk from Bolton that they were using him as a left back, and I had already seen it with the U.S. men's national team, that this is a case where I was hoping he would fit a need at center back, and it just didn't work out that way. But at the time, I was hopeful, because he was, you know, again, a player revered at Bolton, and I thought that at the time, I thought this was going to be a nice signing for Fulham Football Club. Emil, what are your thoughts about these signings, and, you know, at this time of the season? Because like Mike mentioned, you already talked about you were underwhelmed at this point. So what were your thoughts about these three signings?
Yeah, and I think it's up to this point, and let's be honest, where were our biggest gaps and weaknesses in the team? It was actually in central defence again.
Right.
And yes, okay, we've got Jazz Richards, but, you know, steady, unspectacular. We'd obviously brought in, you know, Luke Garbutt to come as a left. But I was actually very encouraged. This guy's an under-21 international, like Mike said. Apparently, Everton fans were claiming him to be the next Leighton Baines. So they were obviously rated him very highly. And yes, he's still a young lad. He's still got a lot of potential to fulfil. But, you know, I was very, very encouraged by that. So I said, OK, maybe we are starting to mean business. You know, he's got an opportunity to play all season for us in the Championship. But unfortunately, he did pick up an injury in the Crystal Palace friendly at home, I think it was, the week before the season started. So disappointing, but there's obviously something that Mike Grigg or the Fulham club, what's attracting these former players of the season at their previous clubs want to come to Fulham? So there must have been a message, a statement or something that encourages these young players to want to come to Fulham Football Club to pursue the next 2 to 3 years of their career. So, you know, why leave Blackburn when they were more successful than Fulham the previous season? You know, why, Ben Pringle was admired by the Rotherham fans. He obviously felt Fulham were going places, as did Tom Kenny, as did all the other players. So there must have been an incentive for these players to want to come to Fulham, despite us having a very, very poor season, you know, 2 years ago. But, you know, overall, if we go back around these three players, Luke Garbutt, you know, I've just mentioned, Matilla knew very little about, and Mike said he played a handful of games, not unspectacular, did a steady job, but frankly not good enough. And Tim Ream, we felt, player of the season at Bolton in a struggling team, came highly rated, can play in various positions, and I thought, okay, maybe we are starting to address the weaknesses in defence. But again, it was quite underwhelming overall. It's 20th of August, the season has already begun, and we haven't really addressed our weaknesses from the previous two or three seasons, which was central defence, and that was my concern. It's just a lot of expectation, a lot of speculation, but there's nothing to show for it.
No, definitely, and again, that's what was disappointing here. You know, I was happy that Tim Ream came to the club, but I just wasn't sure if he was going to be a center back. And you know, it turned out that he was a jack of a couple of trades, but not a master of any, and that was part of the problem with him. We needed two solid center backs, and we just, you know, I was hopeful that Tim Ream would be one of them, but you know, at the time that I was hopeful, but I was also worried because I was hearing from all these Bolton supporters saying that he was a very good left back, and I had already seen that. All right, guys, let's now move and let's talk about, because I think this is part of what was going on with Fulham over the summer. We're talking about this point of the season. The Lewis Dunk speculation was really taken over, and Fulham desperately, like we're talking about, they needed center backs. They needed two solid center backs. Maybe they thought Tim Ream was number one, but they needed a true leader back there, and they went out hard. At least the speculation was after Lewis Dunk, and it wasn't just him. They're also looking at James Tarkowski at Brentford as well. But they were really going after Dunk. And Mike, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts about how this whole thing played out. And I said this to Emilio, and I might have also said it to you, because this speculation kept dragging on and on. And I personally think, this is just my opinion, that Lewis Dunk and his agent used Fulham to get a better deal from Brighton. In my heart, I don't think he had any intention of coming to Fulham. I could be wrong about that, but I think Lewis Dunk really did a number on Fulham. What are your thoughts about this whole speculation with him over the summer?
Well, there was certainly a lot of games going on with Lewis Dunk. I mean, we were after him, there's no doubt about that, and we did bid well, but it just dragged on, and yeah, I'm pretty sure the agents played us, and I think even Brighton played us a little bit, because they wanted to keep him as well. And they, you know, but if we'd pushed and gone in with a very silly bid, who knows, they may well have accepted it. But, you know, I remember the discussions on forums and on Twitter, you know, let's get a centre-back. You know, we're panicking. You know, we need a centre-back. Let's get one. Let's pay anything for him. But in the end, you've got to draw a line. Just as you buy a house and you have a limit of what you think it's worth, with a player, there's a limit. So, you know, people were talking about, yeah, let's pay 5, 6, 7 million for Lewis. I'm going, whoa, hang on a minute. You know, I mean, is he really worth that much? And a question I would ask people, and I asked it on Twitter, and didn't get much of a response, but if we hadn't signed Tim Ream and Stearman, who cost, you know, probably somewhere in the region of 3 or 4 million maybe, if we'd spent that all on one centre-back, Lewis Dunk, Would we be in a better position? So if we hadn't signed Ream, we hadn't signed Stearman, and we only got one centre back in Lewis Dunk, would we have been any different? You know, I don't know if we would be, really, when you look at the way we're coached and the way we defended as a unit and things like that. Would one player have made that much difference? So, you know, it's a difficult one. I know the club really wanted him, but they weren't willing to pay the 6.5, which they were last quoted.
Sure.
So, and I back him on that, because I would not have paid 6.5 for him. And, you know, maybe that led to us, you know, going after Stearman and, you know, a couple of others who we didn't end up signing. But, I mean, it dragged on, definitely. But, I think sometimes you've got to walk away from a deal and just say, no, we're not paying that. And like I say, I back Mike Rigg for that on this particular one as well.
Okay. And that's why I wanted to bring this up, because Emil and I were talking about, you know, Lewis Dunk, because this whole soap opera was going on for way too long. And there is a point where you don't go any further. But again, I go to this, Mike. I kept hearing, people kept contacting me, hearing that you know, again, just fans hopeful, and that they were hearing things that Lewis Dunk was eventually going to come to Fulham, and I always have my doubts, because I kept thinking, because, you know, listen, we're, you know, I'm in business, you're in business, you know, sometimes, you know, it's all business, it's about getting the leverage, and it just played out to me like the agent was really, you know, trying to get a better deal for Lewis Dunk. That's what it came out to me. That's what it looked like to me. You know, only Lewis Dunk knows if he had any thought of really coming to Fulham. It just played out to me that he was using Fulham, him and his agent. But that's just my opinion. Emilio, what are your thoughts about this whole Lewis Dunk speculation over last summer?
I think you guys have really covered off a large proportion of what I was going to say, and I think I want to touch on what Mike said. It's, would he have made a difference had we not signed Stearman and Ream and we only brought Lewis Dunk? I agree with Mike. I'm not too sure that would have made a significant difference. We might have had a bit more awareness, a bit more organisation, a bit more strength and leadership at the back, but would our plight have been any more successful than it ended up being? I'm not too sure it would have been. One central defender or one good defender out of four is not going to suddenly fix the broader problem. So, again, Riggs there to look at the balance of the numbers, look at the financial fair play implications. And it got to a point where, you don't just throw stupid money. We're only Fulham Football Club at the end of the day. We haven't got millions and millions to throw at players. So at the end of the day, it was encouraging that he was targeting another British player, a young future international, played well for Brighton the previous season. And let's be frank, Brighton actually finished in 20th position that year. So for him, Fulham potentially could have been a step up. There wasn't an expectation that Brighton were going to go places this season just gone, and they probably overachieved as a squad, a bit like Leicester City. But, it's disappointing they didn't get promoted. But Lewis Dunk, in the end, made the right decision. He decided to stay put for whatever reason. And, Brighton have just failed by goal difference, not to get automatic promotion. So, yeah. In the end, he did the right thing, not coming to Fulham Football Club. But what was disappointing was the rejection side of things. Why did he reject Fulham Football Club? Did he not believe in Riggs' plan that this was a club going places? Was the money not sufficient? There must be various factors here, but that's the thing that hurt. All that we felt like we were used. But at the end of the day, the player said thank you, but no thanks, and that's what hurt. But fundamentally, why? Why would a Lewis Dunk not feel going to Fulham Football Club was an improvement? Former Premiership team, 13 years in the top flight. You would have thought we'd have the backing of the owner with the funds, Mike Rigg with a policy. And then Lewis Dunk thought this was a club that was going places, but obviously he felt not to be the case. And in hindsight, he made the right decision.
Okay, very good there, my friend. And listen, I'm glad that we're talking about the Lewis Dunk situation. I think it's important to talk about because it really did take over, August, again, that's all we were talking about. We were talking about Lewis Dunk. And Mike brings up a wonderful point that, as a business, they have to make a decision. There's only a certain number that they're willing to go to. And they, if they're looking for silly money, you don't pay silly money. So I give them credit for going after it. And if they weren't willing to pay silly money, I understand why. But I think they made a run at it. But I also think that there, again, just my opinion, there are other factors. I don't know how willing he was to come to Fulham. Truly, if he really wanted to come to Fulham. So that's just my opinion. I just don't know. I feel like Fulham got used. I could be wrong. All right, guys, let's now talk about the rest of the moves made for the summer transfer window. Let's talk about the players that came in. Joe Lewis came in on August 24th on loan. James Husband came on loan on August 28th from Middlesbrough. Ryan Fredericks came on permanently from Bristol City on August 31st. Then we had Richard Stearman at the very end of the window, September 1st, from Wolverhampton. But we also have players going out. So we also have to mention that we have Martin Stuckenberg going out on loan to Southampton, Kostas Mitroglou going out on loan to Benfica, and then Fernando Morbieta going out to Middlesbrough. Of course, he came back later on. Mike, I want to go to you. Let's more focus on the players who came in at the end of the transfer window. Your thoughts about the rest of the players that came in that built the squad that really was the end of the transfer window for Fulham.
Yeah, well, Lewis had to come in because we had injuries to Bettinelli and also Jeanrin, and so we were short in that area. So, he's an experienced keeper and. Looking back, when he did play, he did okay mainly, so a decent signing. Husband and is really linked to Ambrietta. We went for Husband in summer, didn't get him, went for Garbutt, got injured, needed a left back, and Middlesbrough wanted Ambrietta, so a deal was able to be done there, and I think everyone was happy we got Husband in. And, the only disappointment was we couldn't really get him for the whole season. And then Fredericks, who was an odd one. He'd left Spurs, gone to Bristol City. Well, why is he leaving them so quickly. I have heard the story why he left them and came to us after such a short time at Bristol, but I'll keep that private. He's shown that he has an ability and something we dramatically lack in the whole squad, which is pace. And so when you're talking about building a team, building a squad, what's missing, you know, we've said it's the centre backs, but you know, wide men with pace, we had no width at all in the squad. And you know, if you're going to criticise the club, Rig, whoever, then it's wide men is where we fail to bring anyone in, really, when you look back on stuff. And then Stearman is a captain of Wolves. You know, he's been player of the year and loved by the fans. You know, where could it go wrong? We now have our two centre-backs, you know, a pacey full-back, a player who we liked from the previous season. You know, he's done his job, hasn't he? He's brought these players in. And, you know, I don't care what your poll says or what people say now, the vast majority of fans on September the 1st were fairly happy with what had been delivered. And for the guys going out, Steckenberg, well, I've spoken about him before, quite happy not to see him at the club. Mitroglou doesn't want to play for us in the Championship,
yeah.
So that made sense, and we get some money for him. And Ambrea, we got Husband back, and for me, that was a better deal at the time. So, you know,
I agree.
End of the transfer window, very happy.
Okay, and we're going to wrap up the summer transfer window in just a minute, but Emilio, I want to get your thoughts on it before we really focus on the big questions. And so what are your thoughts about the signings and the players going out at the end of the transfer window for Fulham?
I think if I look at the players that we let go, you know, these are people on don't want to play for the club. Steckenberg, very, very average keeper. We paid a lot of money for him on big wages, so the fact that he went to Southampton and actually played for quite a few months and it didn't actually do that bad for Southampton, but at the end of the day, it saved cost from our perspective. I certainly wasn't disappointed to see him go. Petroglu, like Mike said, didn't want to play for us at Premier League, let alone Championship level, so best get rid of him as well. And Morabieta, you know, disappointed to see him go, but then again, we got James Husband as part of the deal, so again, I was reasonably happy there. And if we look at the players that we did bring in that last week of August, early September, I was a little bit more encouraged. I thought, well, actually, not necessarily by the caliber of players that we brought in, more the fact that we haven't released any other players. So the likes of LVC, Dembele, Woodrow, Kaká, Nikolić, or some of these, your usual squad players and starting players, or, you know, not having been sold. I thought, well, maybe there is, you know, with a bit of hope here. We've only sold, really, Brian Ruiz and Pat Roberts as big names. We brought in some good free transfers, you know, some good loan signings, and maybe overall as a package, you know, I was the first to admit, I thought we would comfortably hit top eight. I said that on the show before the season started, that we with the players that we had on board, we should comfortably hit mid-top eight. So to Mike's point, you know, I certainly was pleased with who we got. Richard Stearman, I thought, of the four that we brought in, was one I was most encouraged with. Player of the year for Wolves, you know, brings himself about. We were even touting him as being a future captain, if I recall. So, funny how a year changes things, to be honest. But, you know, you don't become a bad player overnight. And that's what I've scratched my head week in, week out. You know, these players that we brought in overall, not the spectacular signings that we may have wanted, but they were experienced players, players of the year for their respective clubs, good experience, they're British. You know, we couldn't really ask for more, given the restrictions on how much transfer kitty that we had. But you don't become a bad player overnight. And that's why why do these players underperform? You know, is it tactics? Is it the coaching? Is it top down? There's various factors. And maybe that's another show in itself. We need to talk about why there's just underperformance on the pitch itself. But, you know, to Mike's point, I think we were all reasonably pleased. And me and Mike, I think, were two of the most bullish of the co-hosts who were definitely felt that we should be performing top eight as a minimum. And, you know, and
okay.
To this point, I put my hand up. I said that all along and I was wrong.
I was wrong too, you know, because I was there with you. And Emilio, I'm now going to ask a question. I'm going to include our poll because I put a poll up on the Cottage Talk Twitter page. I had 225 votes. So before I share the results of the poll, Emilio, I'm just going to ask you the question. I'm going to answer it too. Did you approve of the team Mike Rigg built for Fulham once the summer transfer window closed last season? My answer is, at the time, I was happy with the team he built. I'm being honest. It didn't work out. He deserves criticism. But at the time, I was happy with it. Were you happy?
Absolutely. I thought it was very ambitious for the club to expect to push for promotion last season. I think very few fans expected an automatic promotion push. But top eight was very achievable with those players that we brought in and some of the average players and the big names that we sold. But you look at who we brought in, how much we spent, or the net spend overall. You know, he deserves some credit, Mike Rigg. You know, he pulled out of the dunk transfer because basically Brighton were asking for too much. So he did the right thing there. We didn't spend millions. We brought in some experienced players. You know, we all felt fairly confident that we can push on and move forward. But I think in the background, there's still a speculation. Was Kit Simons the right man to lead the club forward? There's still all that speculation. And equally,
sure,
everyone, it's easy to criticise Kit when the players underperform. How much input did Kidd have to any of these players? Maybe that's another conversation in itself. But overall, to answer your question, you know, I was reasonably satisfied with Rigg's transfer policy that last summer, and you know, it's a shame that things didn't work out.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like I said, I understand why fans are upset about the job Mike Rigg did, because it didn't work. But I just wanted to focus on the summer transfer window at the end. What was I thinking? And I was thinking, I thought he built a pretty good team. And Mike, before I go to you, I am going to share the results. I had 225 votes. And, you know, again, this is interesting. Did you approve of the team Mike Rigg built for Fulham once the summer transfer window closed last season? Not now. At the time, back in September, yes came in at 34%. 66% said no. So, on my poll, the majority of Fulham supporters did not approve of the job that Mike Rigg did going back to the end of the transfer window. Mike, what are your thoughts? You actually approved of the job, and also what are your thoughts about the poll?
Well, I mean, I said at the end of the transfer window, I was satisfied with, you know, what we had. We were lacking wingers, that's for sure. But I said it earlier in the show, you know, people are looking back with hindsight, and I've looked at forums, I've looked back on the forums around the end of the transfer window, and the vast majority were happy, you know, not ecstatic. I think a vast majority expected us to be top eight, top 10. And you know, we'd gone out and done what most of the fans wanted, which is buy basically British Championship or players with Championship experience ready for this season, and so they delivered on that front. And so it's I don't think people are being totally honest when they're answering that question, because they don't want to say they're wrong. But you know, I'm with Emilio. At the time, I thought yes, and I still think those players are capable, but there's something wrong somewhere in the background of why these players are not performing the way they have done at other clubs. And it's too many different coaches this season getting the same kind of results to say it's not something related to the players. But again, you know, that's just speculation, and could be another show. But yeah, you know, it's just a whole can of worms you can open to discuss what you think is wrong. And, you know, I don't think you'd be able to broadcast the show if we spoke about all the gossip we think is wrong. But yeah, I think personally we had a decent squad come the 1st of September. But as it transpired, it just didn't work out.
It didn't. And let's be honest, you know, in the end, as David Hollywood always say, the table doesn't lie, and David's right. So he deserves criticism because the moves didn't work. So I'm going to try in the next 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll wrap up talking about the January loans and players that returned. I have a couple topics, and I want to pose to both of you guys to see if maybe these were factors. And Mike, I'm going to go back to you because you've mentioned this to me several times, because we're trying to figure out why these players didn't work out. Many of these players that came in, captains, leaders of their team. Mike, is it possible there were too many leaders on that came in these transfers, too many leaders and not enough followers, too many people wanted to take the lead?
I think there's conflicts within the squad. I think that's what I'm going to say. I think you maybe you look back on the Roy team, and there were lots of leaders. Yes, we agreed with that. I think you look at this team, and there have been captains or leaders at other clubs, but I wonder, as a particular unit, are they strong enough? And I take that from looking at social media, things I get told, and that kind of thing. And so, are they working as a team? And I don't think they are. I think there's little groups within that squad which, you know, which have given us the results we've seen. Personal conflicts, but you know, again, I don't really want to go too much into that because it's meant to be about Mike Rigg and his squad. But he's in conjunction with the coaches or any scouts and everything. These are the players he brought in, and just go back to it again. You know, on paper, they should have been good enough. Certainly, at worst, 11, 10, somewhere around there. Not where we ended up in the end.
No, they totally underachieved. Let's call it what it is. They totally underachieved. And but again, you and I have talked about there being too many leaders, but you bring up the point, a very, very good point about under Roy Hodgson, but that there were a bunch of leaders, but they were all on the same page, Mike. That's what you're talking about here. For whatever reason, all these players weren't on the same page. They weren't working together as a team. All these players did not fit together. They were factions. You know, factions.
Yeah, let me just say, having spoken to two of the players, the whole 7 weeks between changing managers, and in the end they've had four different coaches in charge, philosophies being different, that really threw a lot of the players. And, you know, they're experienced ones, and one of them was one of the most experienced ones in the squad. And he was just saying, you know, every day going in, they just did not know who was going to be in charge or taking training that day. So the whole momentum, we didn't really have much momentum when Kit got a sack. We'd just lost two games. But, you know, the sort of momentum that we had where we were sort of getting results just vanished over that 7 week period. And that cost us, and we never ever recovered from it. And and so, you know, in the show we're talking about Mike Rigg, you know, again, I know over that period he was close to signing two managers, and the deals fell through because they wanted more money in the end, or they changed the rules they wanted. And Jurcanovic was interviewed in the first week but would not leave because he was in Europe. So, you know, there is, and another one that you want to do is look at Man United. So people criticising Man United for getting rid of Van Gaal and then also talking to Mourinho behind his back. You know, we didn't do that, apparently. We sacked Simons and we hadn't spoken to anyone. So is there a right or wrong way to do these things? You could say we did the right thing by sacking a person and then looking for the player, looking for the new manager, instead of doing it behind his back. So, again, you know, we could probably spend half hour talking about just that subject.
I hear you, Mike. All right. Emilio, you know, this is just something that I've been thinking about, because I remember my conversation with Mike talking about all these leaders and all these captains coming in. But Mike really just brought up a great point, because it has worked before, but for whatever reason, it didn't work this time. What are your thoughts about that? And Mike brought up a very good point just quickly on that lapse in between sacking Kidd and then getting to Jurcanovic probably was what really killed us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, there are a few personalities at the club. You know, you've got the likes of O'Hara, Tunnicliffe, Sim, and these are all quite strong-minded, strong personalities who you either get on with or you don't. So maybe there could have been a little bit disharmony in the team when the chips were down, the players were struggling and the performances weren't good enough on the pitch. And some of these are maybe some of the players who might cause a little bit of friction in the wider squad. But the key thing here, there was no stability there. You know, the change in leadership, in the coaching, the managers, the seven-week delay to appoint Jurcanovic. What do you get with the teams that are successful, like Leicester, Tottenham, even Brighton, Burnley? What did they all have last season? Stability, you know, steady team. They weren't chopping and changing week in, week out. And, you know, under Kit, you know, I'm not defending Kit here, but ultimately there was a little bit more stability in the starting level. It was a little bit more predictable to forecast, you know, who was going to start on the game. But, you know, Jurcanovic coming in, you know, trying out different players. It's just a bit like Felix Bingo once again. It's just like too much uncertainty. And maybe it was damage limitations. I don't know. But it's that also impacted the performances in the second half of the season. At the end of the day, these weren't his players, but you know, you still need to get the best out of, you know, this squad of players that we've said should have, who significantly underperformed, should have finished at least top 10, if not higher. So a lot of things. There's uncertainty. You know, the 7-week delay will impact you even where I'm at work. If I don't have an immediate manager there supporting me and steering me, then obviously, you know, you start to underperform, and this happened on the pitch. But overall, there's too many factors to discuss in this show. But ultimately, that I think that was a key reason why we finished where we did. With 7 weeks elapsed,
yeah.
Uncertainty, speculation, you know, the O'Haras, all these players coming in, quite vocal on Twitter about, you know, the uncertainty and just wanting a decision made, and so let's just rebuild for the future. But, you know, it took Mike Riggs 7 weeks to make that decision, and ultimately that's why we finished fifth from bottom. Otherwise, I think we would have still secured mid-table. Under Kit, we're in a steady mid-table position, not spectacular, with a bit of upside. They got a shot of him, and that proved to be the catalyst, and then all we did is kept falling down that table, and, you know, we were lucky to hang in at the end. But there's many factors here. That's a key factor, but, you know, I can go on for another hour, but I'm sure the listeners will get very, very bored if we did. But I think we've exhausted this to death now. I think we just have to accept we had a poor season, but these plays don't become bad overnight, and that's, I've reinforced that point I said earlier in the show. Player of the year one season, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 plays, I think it was in total, for their former clubs. Have they all had a bad season this year? There's a number of different factors here. You don't become bad overnight. You don't underperform unexpectedly for one season, but perform well for 5 previous seasons. Something's not quite right there, and maybe there's more behind the scenes that we don't know about, and maybe that's what we need to delve in further.
Okay, very good, guys. And that's actually going to lead me for one more topic. Then we're going to end talking about the January loans of the players that came in, because that's how I want to end the show, because I want to talk about the players that ended the season with Fulham. But, Mike, I'm going to go back to you, because I was thinking about this as well. Because building a team, you and I have talked about a great deal. What was the plan? What was the style of Fulham? Because I didn't see any defined style. Was there a plan to build a team for Kit to win with, or was this just defining the best players Rig felt to help Fulham? So was this team built for what Kit needed, or more just in general for Fulham? Because I'm thinking of a team like Southampton that build the team, not build it the Southampton away, and not really build it around the head coach or manager. What are your thoughts were that went into building this particular team in the summer transfer window? Was it to build it for Kit or more to build it for Fulham? I'm curious your thoughts about that.
Okay, I mean, I'm not one of these conspiracy theorists who think, you know, Rick goes out, gets a player and says, Kit, here you are, get on with it.
I don't think
we're in that. No, but there are people out there who think that's what it is, and I just don't believe that. And, you know, it's not one person making a decision to sign these players. It's a combination of factors. Now, Rick does have, you know, if you believe everything, does have the right to say, you know, yes, I think this player is the right one, you know, if it comes to a vote, if you like. But I don't believe he's foisting these players on him. And, you know, you've got a question, maybe Kit, you know, he's still in his first year manager, being a manager, and, you know, your chief football officer, if you like, comes to you and says, oh, I've got Ben Pringle if you want him. You know, I mean, you know, he's probably going to say yes, isn't he? But I think the philosophy you can see was championship players from the previous season, players who had done well, and mainly British. And that's what he went out and got. And so there was a plan by the looks of it. I think there was a bit of a panic towards the end of August, you know, with regards to getting another centre-back in and a couple of loans because of injuries and stuff like that. And, you know, we failed to get the wingers, as I've said already. But, yeah, I think you can see there was a plan as such. But how it was played out on the actual pitch was a different thing. But I think you can see what he was trying to do if you sort of step back. And the way you've listed everyone for this particular show on the agenda you sent me and Emilio sort of shows that straight away what he was trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and I was just trying to think, was he doing it with Kit in mind, Mike? That was my only thought. Was he trying to bring in players with Kit in mind, or was he trying to just bring in players in general, because like I mentioned, I've seen clubs that try to build a style for their club. That was just my, you know, I'm spitballing, trying to figure out exactly what.
Yeah,
I
understand what you're trying to say. But I mean, you know, Jamie O'Hara has basically said he went to Kit Simons, he rang him up and said, "Can I come and train with you?" Jazz Richards is
right.
Definitely a Kit Simons. So it's a joint thing, isn't it? You know, they've gone out and got these players. But in the end, you know, the scouts and that, they all go to the managers and say, "Well, I've got this player. Do you fancy him?" And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, a lot of this was rigged and in conjunction with Kit at the time. Just as we can look at January and you can see Medel and Ince are probably, you know, Jokanovic's type of players. And Baird sounds like was very much a Mike Rigg one. And Labiard, who knows what. So, you know, maybe it shifted a little bit back to the manager making the decision on players coming in.
Okay, very good. And I'm glad that you already mentioned that, because I was going to go there. With you, Emilio, you know, thoughts on the plan? Because Mike brings up a good point. There was a plan. I was just trying to think if it was catered more towards Kit or towards Fulham. But I'd be curious your thoughts on the plan, and also the players that did come to Fulham on loan in January. Because I want to end talking about that. Michael Maddle, Rohan Ince, Chris Baird, Zakaria Labiata, who obviously didn't work out, and then Fernando Amorebieta came out. So this is twofold for you. Thoughts on the plan? And then thoughts on the players coming out on loan in January.
You know, I think I mentioned this early this time last year, or certainly around late summer, that I don't think the club ever believed that we could gain promotion. I think it was always going to be a two-year minimum plan. The type of players that we brought in terms of a bit of youth, a bit of experience, you know, it's difficult in normal circumstances to get a fairly new squad of players. We brought a lot more depth to the team, but to suddenly expect all those players to gel overnight and suddenly succeed overnight, I think that's a rarity these days. You know, Brighton almost proved that. Leicester have done amazingly well, but that's not the norm. And I wouldn't say I felt a little bit deceived, but I felt all this talk from Khan saying, you know, we want to get back in the Premier League very, very quickly. I don't think there was, in behind the scenes, that there was any expectation that this squad of players were good enough to actually get automatic promotion, maybe playoffs at a push. But I just felt there was always, this is going to be a two-year plan. And, you know, there was, because of the uncertainty, I still believe the lack of, you know, the lack of funds that we invested into the club. Maybe, like I said, we haven't really covered FFP that much in the show tonight. But I still think, to this day, knowing what we know now, that's the reason why maybe the investment or the quality of investment 12 months ago wasn't what we all expected. I think we were reasonably satisfied given where we were, that these were experienced players, they were British. We were targeting a two, maybe a three-year plan, but I felt somewhat deceived. Maybe there's too much of Khan going on record saying we want to get back into the top flight quickly and we've got the right man coaching the club. We've got Rigg, who's affecting the transfer policy for the club. This club is going places. But in reality, I don't think on the ground that was ever going to be the case. I think it was just to keep things ticking along, you know, to try to stay within the boundaries of FFP, which we just slightly just missed. And, you know, hope that Kit, in the meantime, whilst there was this uncertainty without this transfer kitty, Kit was the right man just to keep the ship steady and try to get the best out of these players. I honestly don't think there was enough ambition at the club. I'll be very frank. It's easy to say now what we know, but 12 months ago, I wasn't particularly overwhelmed, but still felt we can hit top eight and this will be a platform to progress this coming season. We've added these 12 whole season, British players, experienced players playing at the club, and all we can do is go upwards rather than downwards. But I still think there's this issue about ambition at the club, and that has to play equally a part in the failure of the club over the last 12 months.
Okay, very good there, Miller. Just thoughts in general on the players that came in January.
You know, again, uninspiring, really. Just still there just for damage limitations. Maddell came in just to strengthen the central defence. You know, Austrian international, it couldn't be any worse than the place that we've got in defence. So at least there was a recognition, albeit too late, that we had to bring in some experience there. Rowan Hintz, just to shore up the midfield, you know, did a steady job. And, you know, again, would I want him long term? Not too sure. Chris Baird was just short-term cover, really. I think I'm not normally a big fan of a player returning a second time to the club, and
We've seen this several instances in the last few years where that's happened and they haven't really performed satisfactorily. Labiad, well, less said about him, the better. And Amore Bieta, you know, to be honest, yes, we know what he's capable of doing, picking up the yellow card, giving away the silly free kicks. But overall, he's one of our more experienced defenders. And I think him and Maddle started to form a more competent pairing up in the central defence. Not to say we can do better, but I don't want to slag him off. I don't think he was as bad as maybe people have been saying on the last few months. I think his experience has been quite invaluable, albeit we still finished fifth from bottom. So overall, nothing special. We were restricted what we could do in the January transfer window, and you know that these signings proved that. It was just really damage limitations, if anything.
Okay, very good. And it was just at that point trying just to stay in the division, which we did do. All right, guys, to wrap up the show, this is what I'd like from both of you. I just want to get your overall thoughts on what we discussed and what you got out of it. And also just share your overall thoughts on the job that Mike Rigg has done in his first season with Fulham. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just your thoughts on everything that we discussed. And like I mentioned, just your overall impression of Mike Rigg's first year in charge of Fulham as chief football officer.
Well, I mean, when you've finished where we have, you know, in the position in the table, then it's got to be a failure in that way, isn't it? You know, if he's in charge of everything football related. But, you know, the good thing about this show and the way we've sort of done it is, you know, if people take a step back and look at the players who came in, we've also got the knowledge now that the first transfer window, the summer window, the club knew pretty much that they were going to get hit with some kind of embargo in January. So maybe they spread the money a little bit on signing these players on, you know, 2-3 year contracts. Because you look at some of the contracts on these lads and they're quite long because they didn't know if they were going to get a month or a season, embargo. So we carried a very heavy squad number-wise, a good 5 or 6 more than we usually do at the end of August. So that's another thing to look at. So while we may not have spent a lot of money, you know, we brought in quite a high number of players. So, and then you look at January, and if he was involved in bringing those players in, the job was done, if you like, that we stayed up. But 3 of those players, Medel, Ince and Ambrieta, probably 3 of our better performers in the last half dozen games, you know, 10 games, somewhere around there. So they did well. But the biggest thing you've got to look back is the 7 weeks, you know, between his decision to remove Kit Simons, maybe the indecision or not making the decision last summer probably cost us more. But that 7 weeks, that's the biggest millstone around Mike Rigg's neck. That's the thing fans are having a go at. And if he has survived this review, apparently, which was done over the last few weeks, then all well and good. I know when I spoke to him at the end of the last game, he said, you know, work starts the next day in conjunction with Jokanović. So, you know, the proof being the pudding, wasn't it? Let's see who they're going to sign and who brings in. I mean, you know, Parker's extended, Medel signed, Mitroglou's gone. And there's be a few other, you know, we're going to see the release list this week, hopefully. So if I'm going to give him a score, it's going to have to be like a C- or something, really, for
okay.
The season, considering where we finished.
Sure, and that's understandable. C- is fair. It could be lower, so I understand why you went there. Mike, very, very good analysis. And I'm glad that you went back because, again, we have to talk about those 7 weeks because that's on his watch. It was his responsibility to bring in a new man. And that really affected our season and probably is a big part of why we ended where we ended. All right, Emilio, your final thoughts.
To echo what Mike said, I think the 7 weeks issue was obviously the biggest factor there, but it's, you know, the financial fair play, I'm not being banging on about this evening, but I think that equally had an important bearing on the type of play that we could have purchased and the amount of investment we could have made in the last 12 months. So I think he was somewhat restricted. And if that's the case, and likely to be the case, and the fact that he managed to recruit, you know, former players of the year, good British experienced professionals, you know, why didn't the players perform on the pitch? You know, you can't blame Mike Rigg for that. You know, at the end of the day, he brought in experience, some young players, a lot of potential. Luke Garbutt, under 21 internationals, you know, some good signings there on paper. The fact they haven't performed on the pitch, you know, that's not Mike Riggs' issue. So I'm going to give him some brownie points just for that. But overall, the delay in appointing Jokanović probably should have got rid of Kit Simons 12 months ago. So yep. these were big calls that he had the authority to make, and you know, delayed for whatever reason, and he has to pay the price for that. He can't blame anyone else for those mistakes. So that's, you know, two negatives on his part. But financially, from the other perspective, I think there's some other indirect benefits of his recruitment policy. And obviously, he slashed the wage bill. His net spend was very, very low. Theoretically, we've still got a squad of players who should be performing better. But obviously, let's see how much empowerment he gives to Jokanović. Now, he's made the appointment. He's got one of his first choice coaches in charge now. Let's see over the next 3 months what level of empowerment he gives Jokanović. And I'll give Mike Riggs probably a B-, you know, for his overall net for last season. But let's see what he does over the next 3 months. Let's see if he puts the money where his mouth is and gives Jokanović the opportunity to build a squad around him. And Jokanović obviously must see something at the club that enticed him to come and sign for the club. So obviously, I'm sure he'll have some influence in terms of the players he signed, and hopefully he can get rid of some of the dead weight. But let's be frank, these players should have performed a lot better, and you can't blame Mike Rigg for that.
Very, very interesting takes by both of you, and thank you, Mike, for bringing up the 7 week window of Kit leaving and then Jokanović coming, because I should have put that down on our agenda. I was trying to squeeze so much in, and that was a factor in everything that went down. So I'm glad that we got to that in the end. And I thought this was a very interesting discussion overall. There was a lot to discuss, and I think we got through most of it. There were some things we didn't get to. But I want to thank you both for doing this. I got a great deal out of it. For me, I would give him a C because I thought he built a team. I'm being honest. I was one that was happy in September 1st with the team he built. But overall, it didn't work. The players, you know, did not live up to their expectations. That's not really his fault, but it just didn't work. So he takes the brunt of it. But like Mike had said, and you, Emilio, as well, those 7 weeks is what really did us in. That's where I really go. And he's ultimately responsible for that. So that's why, you know, I'll go with a C, and I think I might be a little generous. All right, guys, thank you again for doing the show with me. I hope you guys got a great deal out of it. Mike, hopefully you can join me soon again for another show. You were great tonight, my friend, before we go.
Yeah, cheers, Russ. Cheers, Emilio. Yeah, I look forward to it, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have a busy summer and plenty of shows to talk about Fulham.
I'm sure we will as well. Emilio, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you very much for having me. Thanks, Russ. Thanks, Mike. Speak to you both soon.
Okay. Well, that's going to do this for this show. For Mike and Emilio, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Good night. Speak to you soon.
Yes.
Good night.